Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User-Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User-Friendly 2.0. Welcome to the show this week. We've got a lot of great stuff for you. Send us your questions and your comments. 503-766-6264 or One User-Friendly on Facebook and Twitter. We also have a podcast. If you missed the live broadcast, it's on theanswerportland.com. Posted at 6 o'clock on Friday evening, you can play it on demand. What's in the news?
Well, we have some sad news. Rene Morel Auberjonois died.
You know
who that is?
I know who that is. Yeah, he played Odo on Deep Space Nine. And he was in MASH. He was in Benson, I think,
and
too.
He was in Benson. Yeah.
Very, very good actor. I really enjoyed him. I saw him for the first time in Benson, and I liked him in DS9, Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
He was the priest, wasn't he, in MASH? I'm trying to remember. It was Father Mulcahy. I think he played Father Mulcahy in MASH.
And the Benson character, he was very, very good at that. And then the shapeshifter. So he did a lot of roles very well.
He's a very good actor.
So he will be missed. He's one that I actually managed to get his autograph at one point and have it on my wall in my office. So
haptic interface allows touch through VR.
So virtual reality is coming into its own now. And we're seeing a lot of new technology that is something I think today that would still be for early adopters. But it is this idea that you can actually touch, feel different things using a VR environment. So for any of us that have seen the movie Ready Player One or read the book, they kind of get into this a few years down the road with treadmills and bodysuits. Well, it's looking like we're heading in that direction. The touch interface is something that's coming out that allows, say, a parent that can't be with her child to be able to touch on a device that picks up her touch, and then the child actually would feel it through the internet. So from a positive environment, that could be something that would be really cool. I can't see what would maybe go wrong with something like that. But the point being is with tech, there's always good actors and bad actors out there.
I can think of all kinds of things, but we'll keep going.
Yeah, I think it's important, like with anything else, to realize that the technology itself is benign. It just allows you to do something, and what you do with it is really what it plays out to be.
So this is kind of leading to the holodeck from Star Trek.
We're going in that direction. We don't have hard light technology yet. I think we will eventually. But for right now, we're definitely able to create a completely virtual environment. You have to wear the equipment. You're not in the room yet, that kind of thing. But it is certainly the starting point of that type of an idea.
So I put on a bodysuit.
We're moving in that direction.
I put on a bodysuit here and call my mom in California.
Yeah, California. Yeah.
And I can give her a hug.
Yeah, that's kind of the direction this is headed.
If she has a bodysuit.
Yeah, you would all have to have the same equipment and the same device.
Wow.
All right. T-Mobile confirms November hack.
So this is something that came out and was actually started to be announced at the end of November. And it's about 1 million customers. I mean, all of these hacks now seem to be in the millions. So there you are. T-Mobile, user account numbers, the plans that they had, some different personal information, that type of a thing. Recommendation that's being made is the same as normal for these type of things. Go on, change your password. If you use the same password on T-Mobile that you did on another system, you want to change it on all of those and keep an eye on your bill and that type of a thing. The problem with this type of a hack isn't so much directly that someone's going to be able to charge something to your phone bill, but it gets them enough personal information that they may be able to spoof something else and get other information that does allow them access to your money. So you want to be careful. And you want to keep a watch on these type of things and just be aware that if you're a T-Mobile customer, this happened.
So, you know, we go back to this. Is there ever a solution to this problem? I mean, how do at some point we find a way as a society to force these businesses and force our government to start protecting us? And nobody seems to be doing that because we've dealt with this a couple of times on this show.
Yeah, well, a couple of times. We deal with this almost every week. And the reality of the situation is that network environments and where your data is housed are protected in many ways. And I use this analogy a lot. It's the idea of the lock on your front door. The bigger the lock, hopefully somebody will go somewhere else. Unless you have them on a lease inside, and then they're eventually going to get through it. So short of disconnecting a system from the internet, making it 100% hack-proof is not a technology or not something that we've been able to do yet. But there are, and most of the time when these hacks happen, not always, but most of the time it's because somebody did something stupid. And what I mean by that is they left something out, they didn't change a password, they didn't deal with locking the environment down. A lot of them's been that they've placed files on things like hosting services and that type of thing that were open that the bad actors could get to.
Or they answered an email.
Opened
an email.
Yeah.
An attachment.
And those type of things are how and what they look for to get into your systems. One of the best ways, but it is a little bit more difficult, is to use something called multi-form authentication, or MFA is the acronym for it. And that basically, usually you use your phone, you can use another device. So if you're logging onto an account, you have to have this backup way to get in. Now, the downside to it is you would always have to have your phone with you to be able to approve it, or you couldn't log on to, say, your email or whatever you had protected.
See, Apple does that a lot because I use Apple. Apple does it quite a bit. Every time I'm accessing something, Google will send me information too.
Yeah, Google, we just turned it on with that. And it's the better way to go. It does make things more secure. It's still not 100%, but it is better.
Cashless supermarkets coming soon.
So for our Seattle listeners, you may have seen this. Amazon has had these where you go in and the system's designed to know what you pick up and what you put back. And then when you're ready to pay for it, you don't have to go through a check stand. And this technology is, I guess, coming into its own now. I know that they're still working out some bugs with it, but it's gotten a lot better. And they're going to start licensing it to other stores. So the idea of this being is that you'll go into your supermarket at some point in the future and not have to check out anymore. Positive to that is that it will save time and mistakes and all that kind of thing. Negative, it is one less level of human interaction that we're starting to see now that won't be there. So again, positive and a negative seems to be with all of these type of things with new technology, but it is definitely something that is moving ahead and something that I think that we'll see in the next couple of years a lot more locally than we have recently.
So I have a question. What happens when you have a person who doesn't have any funds and they walk out the door?
Well, there would conceivably be controlled. I mean, you know, like now, I think that's called shoplifting.
Yeah, but I mean, if there's no line, it's not necessarily obvious.
Well, the way that it works now at cashless stores, they're through Amazon, so you have your Amazon app. So you would definitely have some kind of a scenario that would tell somebody, and the store is not completely absent of employees either. It would tell somebody that you're in a situation where that person doesn't have the funds to be able to pay for it, and they would address it in some way. So one of us should go there, make sure we have no funds on our account, and just see what happens. Anyway.
I volunteer.
Yeah. Okay. So, our next one is Google Cloud Print being retired. So what exactly is that?
Google Cloud Print is a piece of software that's used by Chromebooks and a number of other devices to allow you to set up virtual printers on the internet and be able to print to them. The idea with this originally was you could print from your phone, which may or may not have printer drivers, that type of a thing, or a tablet or those devices. But in this day and age, it's come to a point where most of our computers and phones and everything else can print directly. So this system is being retired at the end of 2020. There's a lot of people out there that are still using it. So it's something that Google wants to get word out now because it's going to be necessary to recreate these systems, come up with a new way of doing it, deploy it in a different methodology. And set it up in such a way that if you're using it now, you won't be using it from a year from now. Because if you are, it will abruptly stop at the end of 2020. So whenever we're dealing with technology, you can have good things and bad things happening. We're talking in the news a little bit about some of the new stuff that's coming out and how things can be used in a positive and a negative way. And I know a little later in the show today, we're going to be talking about the whole idea of phone calls not being answered when you're getting a hold of companies and that type of thing. And we just ran into this and I had a question on it and also had a personal experience with it, which is why I wanted to talk about it. Now, of course, everything here is my opinion and my own opinion. But for the last year, I've been using Frontier Communications for internet access. And their service has been very good as far as the fiber goes and all the rest of that stuff. However, I needed to switch out. The bill suddenly went up because the promotional period ended. And I was going to move, so I was looking at something else. So I had actually called to cancel the service. First time called in, never got the packaging back to deal with any of the stuff, the boxes, that type of a thing. And then they came up with the hidden fees. It's $9.95 for the privilege of canceling. In terms and conditions, I tried to look it up. I found it about 10,000 words, give or take, into the document.
There you go.
Second part of it is that they provided service for about 10 days in the billing period, and they've billed for the whole month. Well, we don't do partial month billing. So you have to pay for these services that are not rendered. My issue with all of this is check it out, make sure whoever you're signing up with doesn't do this kind of stuff, or if they do, you're aware of it, because it can really create a problem. And the only thing that's happened with this now, I'm in a place where I could use Frontier, but I'm not going to. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Send us your questions. Send us your comments. The show can be reached at 503-766-6264. A lot of questions that have been coming in have been about dealing with training and online and different styles of that. And joining us today on that is Mark Spencer, creative partner at Ripple Training. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Ripple Training. Now, Mark, Ripple Training does training for Apple video production products, DaVinci Resolve, which is also a video production system. And there are a lot of people these days, Mark, making movies. I can make a movie on my cell phone. And so your organization, you have, I mean, I've looked at some of your products. You have plugins and all kinds of things for Final Cut Pro, training on motion, training systems for DaVinci Resolve, which I also find a very interesting program. Tell me a little bit more about how your product can help like the average person make a movie. If I want to make a home movie of my children or my grandparents or my dog.
Sure. So we do Ripple Training. We've been around for about 15 years and we do training in both production and post-production, which means we teach people how to both shoot movies as well as edit them and do all the other parts, the creative parts that you do on the computer to get the movie finished. So and today, like you said, with the tools that we have, the phones are so good now. The cameras and the phones are so good that there's no excuse not to make a movie. The tools have been democratized and available easily to do that. And if you just take your phone and outfit it with a couple of extra things to ensure that you have, you know, very stable shots and well-lit shots and good sound, you can tell your story, whether that's, you know, a big feature film or it's just something that you personally want to do. The tools are there to do it. And, you know, our job has been teaching people how to do that and make it easier to get that done.
Hey, you use Final Cut Pro. Let's take Final Cut Pro. A lot of your plugins are for Final Cut Pro. Final Cut Pro is a couple $100. And you can put Final Cut Pro on your phone, can't you?
Can you? No, you need Final Cut Pro runs on a Mac, so you need to run it on a MacBook Pro or a MacBook or an iMac or something like that. So you need to edit. You can usually do your editing on a computer. But you can shoot everything on your phone. And I, in fact, this past summer, I taught a bunch of high school kids summer camp how to basically shoot and edit using iPhones. So they shot everything with iPhones and just airdropped all their clips after they shot them onto the Macs and did all the editing. And Final Cut's so accessible and easy to get into, they picked it up immediately. They were editing pretty much immediately, they scripted stories, they came up with stories, scripted them, acted in them, and put out these stories. And at the end of the week, we had a film festival with these things they had done on phones that just looked fantastic.
Now, Mark, you have a lot of people out there that will shoot some video on their phone or whatever and have all this put together. What does a training program look like? What is actually involved for that person to get from, I've got a few video clips, to actually being able to go through your system and be able to come up with something that is good and looks presentable?
Well, first of all, if somebody's just getting started, I'd recommend maybe checking out iMovie if you have Absolutely. No experience at all. iMovie is something that does work on your phone. There's a version that works on your phone. So if you've shot some clips and you aren't near a computer, you can immediately look at those clips. You can trim them. You can reorganize them. You can build a string out, which means putting a bunch of clips next to each other. You can put in titles and transitions. You can really get things started. You can then take that you've done on your phone, and you can either bring it into iMovie on your Mac, which comes free with any Mac, or if you want to go a little further, because iMovie is a little bit limited once you start doing this, you want to be able to add more tracks and add more audio and effects, you probably want to go to Final Cut when you really want to start getting a little bit deeper into crafting a story with good color correction and things like that. So our training really focuses on besides the production side of how to get good audio and good picture and do all that, on the post side, it really focuses on using Konica Pro and making it easy to understand how to get into it and really teach you how to import your footage, how to use keywords and smart collections and tagging to find and identify the best pieces of the clips that you want to use, how to very quickly edit pieces together and trim them and move them around without spending a lot of time clicking all over the place, like really efficiently, how you can do that, how you can add titles and transitions, how you can do color correction to fix problems. You shot things in the wrong color temperature or whatever, and how to do a lot of audio editing, because a lot of people don't realize that audio is really more than half the job. People will watch a shaky, poorly shot video if the audio is good, but if the audio is bad, it will turn people off immediately. So we teach you how to fix bad audio and how to work with audio to make, to really polish your work, to make it really professional.
And you have products to teach. So you recommend, if I have an Apple computer, a Final Cut Pro isn't that expensive, a couple hundred dollars, isn't it?
Final Cut Pro's the $300. There's some education pricing out there. You can get it bundled with some other applications, but it's $300. It's interesting thing. It's a one-time purchase. And they've updated Final Cut Pro 10 now for the past, since 2014, 5 years. Yeah. And there's never been a charge for any updates. So, it's a...
And in fact, if you can master iMovie, Final Cut Pro is fairly easy, because that's how I learned Final Cut Pro, basically, was working with iMovie. Now, you have products that add to Final Cut, plugins, things that transition so I don't have to go to into Motion 5. I use Motion 5 a lot for graphics and for, you know, special effects and things like that. But your plugins fit that bill.
Yeah, so we create plugins to just make it easier if you don't want to spend a lot of time developing custom title animations or custom transitions. Or we sell plugins that do things that will, like, if you need to blur a logo that somebody's wearing on a shirt, or you need to track some text to something, we have plugins that do all of those things and more. We've been doing plugins for Final Cut for probably about 8 or 9 years now. And we basically make product for things that we would like ourselves. You know, so if you don't want to spend a couple of days designing fancy titles, you can just buy a plugin that will give you a lot of those and save a lot of time.
Mark, what does your training experience look like? Is it like an instructor-led class, or how does that work?
No. So our training, it's all online. We have a player. We have a dedicated proprietary player on our website, rippletraining.com, where you basically, once you purchase a tutorial, it's not a subscription. You choose what you want. You buy that tutorial. Then it's shown through this player, and the player allows you to do things like it's broken into specific lessons. You frequently, the media comes with it, so you can download the media and play along. So you edit in Final Cut, and then you look at the player and you work with it. We also have an extension that's built right into Final Cut Pro. So Final Cut Pro has the ability to have built-in applications. There's a little button in Final Cut, and you click it, and you open up our window in Final Cut, and you watch how to do something, and then you do it in Final Cut. So it's very integrated right into the application.
Well, Mark, listen, that's our time for today. So I want to thank you for coming on and being a part of this. And hopefully we can have you back and talk about this in a little more detail.
And it's rippletraining.com.
Rippletraining.com. That will get that out on our social media. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Streaming media services are becoming a bigger deal this year. They've been out for a little while now, but they're coming into their own. And the amount of churn among cord cutters is expanding. And right now, to benefit that, AT&T is pushing up their prices on traditional cable TV, U-verse, all that kind of stuff. So I'm not sure how all of that goes together, because I know from my own standpoint, I've been using these over-the-top or streaming media services and haven't had traditional cable for about 4 years now. Gee, you've actually been on traditional services, and I know you're
still am.
You still are. But it looks like you're going to be able to probably make the switch pretty soon.
I think I can. So you just mentioned something about, so I use Comcast. So Comcast is going to start raising rates. Wouldn't you think they'd start lowering
rates
to keep
me?
That's
what I would think. It's not Comcast that's announced it, but AT&T, but DirecTV, all that stuff.
But, but all these people, they're jacking up their rates because people are cutting cords?
Yeah, so it's...
Wouldn't it be better
It would seem like it would keep the... You know, I'm not testing the logic there. But let's talk about some of the streaming media. Jeremy, you've just started working with Disney Plus, I know, and Mandalorian we talked about. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, well, Disney Plus is their branded streaming service, and they have Fox, Disney, Marvel, National Geographic. And, you know, there's 7,000 movies on this system.
Right.
And all these old, cool TV shows that I remember from the 90s that I've wanted to watch again. And I can. And, you know, it's $6.95 a month.
$6.95 a month and 10 million subscribers in their first day of operation. I know they're still getting some of the bugs worked out, but I've finally got it working on my end. A week ago, I hadn't been there, and I've really started liking it. I like some of the National Geographic thing, like Gordon Ramsay's show that's only on there. So that, you know, picking that media up from that type of a thing. But the other side of it, too, this service is a lot like a thing like Netflix, where you can watch movies on demand and all of that. But a lot of us still like the regular TV channels. And you can do that too without traditional cable now as well. And there's
YouTube's on.
YouTube TV. Yeah. I've been playing with Hulu TV. I was using PlayStation View. They're consolidating and cutting that service at the end of January. So I switched over to Hulu to try that out. But there's Sling TV's another one. There's a number of these out there that all you need is a high-speed internet connection. They work well. You don't have to rent boxes. You don't have to have special cables, all of these type of things. And I can see why this is going in a much, in that direction a lot, because it's easier.
Okay, so I'm going to take the negative side of this. A lot of times my internet service can be a little bit iffy.
Right.
You know, something was wrong. You still have to have some kind of a cable provider to get your internet service. And sometimes that's a little dicey and whatever. So what happens? I want to watch my favorite show and all of a sudden I can't get my internet
going. It will stop. And that is the downside to over-the-top services. If you have a problem with the connection. Now, one of the things that I have noticed is providers like Charter and Comcast, which generally provide both the internet and the cable TV, classic cable TV. If one goes out, the other one seems to have a problem too. So it does seem like they're connected anyway. I've seen where the boxes drop when the internet drops, and it is the same wire. Yes, you do have to have an internet connection. And right now, in order for that to work, needs to be a wired internet connection.
I have one other question. So quality, what's the quality of the picture?
This is something that has super improved in the last couple of years. It used to be that streaming media, well, a long time ago, would stop and start and be a little portion of the screen. And then they got it to full screen standard definition. Now today, you can get full 4K video as long as your internet connection's good, like we were talking about, with a Dolby Atmos and all of those different systems over the internet-based system, and it looks and feels just fine. In fact, we were trying this out with a 4K version of Netflix, where we were watching the original Star Trek, and Jeremy and Gretchen, you can attest to this, it was almost like they were in the room.
Yeah. It was. It was amazing.
It was impressive.
So the quality of the picture may even be better.
Yeah, it could be better, and it's going to certainly be able to do 4K, like a lot of what we're used to now. So what you can get with the classic cable, you can get with the system.
And some of these companies are like, I think it's Amazon Prime that has Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Beautiful set design, beautiful costuming, filming, wonderful writing. It's funny. So these cordless, whatever you want to call them, streaming services are making amazing things for us to watch.
Absolutely. And this, Gretchen, that's something that's really interesting to bring up, is the whole idea of original content. And that's one way that these services are competing for your dollar, because they offer something that you can't get anywhere else. We talked about
Disney.
And
they're not as expensive.
They're not as expensive. And you actually have a lot more choice on what you get. You don't have to take a package. You can just buy the content you want. So, you know, as far as all of that goes, I think that's a good thing. Netflix has a lot of original content. We're seeing this across the board. Disney's whole platform is based on the idea of it's the only way to get to Disney's content. And as far as all of that goes, I think it's something that gives us a lot more control. This is User-Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break.
Have you seen him? He's from the future. He's got a really big computer. And he uses it every day. And he uses it every way. What's he using it for? You know I'm not.
Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Send us your questions. Send us your comments. One User Friendly on social media, that being Facebook and Twitter. You can also reach out to us on the phone at 503-766-6264. That's 503-766-6264. And gee, speaking of phone calls, you've been having bad calls.
Well, you know, nobody answers your phone anymore. Everything's a phone tree. If you're trying to get a hold of the government, remember we tried to get a hold of the Federal Communications Commission?
I do.
If we'd have said the seven words you can't say on TV, they would have contacted us. It took us 6 weeks to reach them.
Right.
Federal Emergency Management, FEMA. Took us 6 weeks to reach them. I've been trying to reach Senator Markley, Ed Markley, I think it is, in Massachusetts, over some information. He wants to do a hidden fee bill to say providers can't have all these hidden fees. Doesn't call me back. I've sent emails. I've actually talked to his staff. We just want to put him on the show. Yeah. Nobody wants to call you. Nobody wants to talk. Remember, I had a DirecTV problem. Somehow I got DirecTV. I didn't even order it. Now, if you want to order DirecTV, you can call. They have 4 million operators ready to talk to you. If you have a problem with your bill, or I had a problem like I don't even have it, you can't talk to them. You have to text them.
And this seems to be across the board. I was whining earlier about Frontier, same kind of problem. And the thing of it is we're running into this. And what we want to ask you as our listeners.
Are you tired of it?
I'm
tired of it.
Yeah.
You can't reach a person. And if it's government, they can outlast you. Or if you have a financial, an argument with a bill, like with your internet provider or somebody like that. They will outlast you. It's only $10. Oh, well, I'll just give up.
Yeah. And that's exactly what
I'm tired of it.
Yep.
Is anybody else tired of it? I want to know.
Let us know. Give us a call. Give us a contact. And with no further ado, what are our questions this week?
First is, what is a good VR platform for the holidays this year?
Now, what's a VR?
Okay.
Come on.
Yeah. Let's start at the beginning. VR stands for virtual reality. One of our acronyms. Two kinds of things, virtual reality and augmented reality. VR is big this year. A lot of games, a lot of different things you can do with the headsets. So platforms that are out there, well, there's a number of different ones. HTC makes one. Oculus, which is a company owned by Facebook, makes one. Those are platforms that would primarily work with your computer independently. The other thing that's out there and on the market is console systems. So PlayStation 4 has their own equipment. That one's really good, too, if you want to use it specifically for PlayStation 4 games. So it depends a little bit on the equipment that you're working with and what you want to do and how you want to do it and what you want to be accessible and how much money you want to spend.
I'm being the old guy here. I like real reality, but that's another
actual
story.
Last year, Gene.
Next question.
What's the difference between corded and cordless VR?
So this is
one has a cord, one doesn't.
Well, there you go. And, thank you for high-end answer. All right. So there's a couple of different methods to deal with this. The corded is actually the most powerful because you use a computer to run it. So your headset actually ends up becoming a screen and an audio setup. But what's really happening to it, all the processing, all the video imaging, all that kind of stuff starts with a desktop computer or a game console like your PlayStation 4. Now, the power of the computer dictates how much it can or cannot do. So you'll see, if you look for a PC, an item called VR Ready. And that means it's a computer that's been certified through whatever method they use to actually be able to run these headsets. Now, the other one that's out there is cordless. And these are starting to come into their own now. But you do have a battery and you do have limitations to the processor power because it has to be built into the actual headset. So on those type of things, you want to be ready that you're going to have to recharge them. The other one runs off the computer's power supply, things like that. But you don't have the cords.
At what point do you finally plug this into your brain? Do we reach a point where we can just plug something into our...
It's coming. Cybernetics is just around the corner. Gretchen, you had a question.
Yeah, a little more useful. how heavy would the cordless VR headset be? Because if it's got batteries and all this other stuff in there, are those going to be heavier?
You know, it's a good question. With the ones I've played with, it's not as bad as you might think. Weight difference is about 30%. They are heavier because there's more equipment in them, but it's not like to a point that it was, or at least for me, was uncomfortable or anything like that.
See, that was the thing I was thinking of too with the Gretchen was if you did the cordless thing, I mean, gosh, that headset
the weight's
would be
a lot
heavy.
Less. You just have a tether, you know.
Is HoloLens a VR?
HoloLens is a product that's made by Microsoft, and it's something that I've played with and I think is really cool. But it's not VR, it's AR, augmented reality. So the difference between the two is virtual reality puts you in a completely different environment. Augmented reality leaves you in the environment you're in and supplements it in some way. So where I was using this as a, for example, was working on my car. With the lens on, I could still see the engine and everything I normally would, but I had the service manual right in my goggles so that when I looked at a part, I could see the part number, get the videos on how to fix it, how to change it, that type of a thing. So augmented reality adds to the environment you're in. Virtual reality replaces it completely. So no, it is not a VR appliance. It is an AR appliance.
Wow.
Okay. What happened to Google Glass?
Well, I don't know. I lost that a couple of years ago. And
yeah.
So Google Glass was a very interesting product that came out a number of years ago now and was an approach by Google for the first augmented reality glasses or headset that was supposed to be mainstream. They released it into what was called an Explorer Edition and a few other things to where people could try it out. It was several thousands of dollars to get into it. And it was a product that they actually never went beyond the beta test phase for using. Kind of a cool product, had some issues and had some things that they were trying to work out, but it never materialized, and that's why we don't see it on the market now. I do see in the next year or two some competitors coming in that are going to be very, very similar.
You know, and then we go back to my question, when do we finally plug this stuff into our brains?
Well, I mean, gee, you would have to have one to start with. But,
true. Maybe
so there are going to be some issues there. All right, we've got time for one more quick question.
Okay, I think we might have answered this already. Do we need a special computer for a VR headset?
Yeah, we kind of touched upon this already, but the answer to that on the corded ones is yes, you need a console that's compatible with it. You need something that will work on it. Look at the processing power. You want a higher-end unit. You want a computer that's VR ready, and they will be advertised as that. The one I use is an Alienware, which is a high-end model made by Dell. There's a number of different manufacturers out there. I've had good luck. And look at the ratings, and like anything else you would do, you want to make sure that what you're getting is going to be good. You're going to drop a couple thousand dollars on buying the right equipment to run this if you're doing it from scratch. So doing your research is very, very much something that you want to take care of here. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Great show this week, guys.
I agree.
You know, we've been talking a little bit about some of these different things. Virtual reality is definitely something that's coming into its own now, but it is definitely something you want to think about because it is an investment. And like we were saying before, to really get into it, if you don't have any equipment to start with, you're going to drop $1,800, $2,000 to get the computer, the headset, and everything that you need. So make sure you get one that you actually want, and it's not regrettable. If working, it's great. But it is definitely something you want to think about. And if you want to start a little bit more at an entry-level point, there are ways to do it where you use your phone, and Google actually has a product out that you can still find if you look online that's made out of cardboard, which is $5 to get it started. So it won't work as well as the bigger headsets, but it will give you an idea of what the environment actually is. And I think as we're getting into things with this haptic feedback and all of that type of thing, we're really seeing the next stage in gaming here where you don't just sit behind the television, but you actually move. And in line with that, Gretchen, I know one of these games that is one that you really like is Beat Saber. Tell us a little bit about that, just to give everybody an idea of what you can do.
Well, first of all, Beat Saber is very much a very active game. It's not sitting on the couch. You're standing, and you're in this unusual kind of environment where you're holding a lightsaber in each hand, two different colors, and these shapes come at you, and you hit the correct shape matching to the correct color. And there's tons of fantastic music that you can select from. And you're playing this game where you're hitting these blocks and things that are coming at you. And it's just a lot of fun. I've never really been that much into video games, but with VR, oh, I'm there.
Yeah. And it's aerobic. It's aerobic.
Yeah, you can access
how you hit them.
It's a workout.
It's a workout, but if you depending on how you hit them, you get a better score.
Yeah, yeah, it can
so
actually
you just
measure
lazily whack at them.
you'd still get points. But if you hit them harder and more accurately on the little angle, you get the more points.
Yep.
And you have to dodge the moving walls. So you get a duck and dodge and step left and right. And it's a good workout. It's a lot of fun.
Go try it out at the very least. And we were picking on Frontier, I know, a little bit this week because it's an example I've had. But we do want to hear your feedback on some of these things, good and bad. Because there's a lot of companies that do provide good customer service as well. It's not just
much
negative.
Government.
But, well,
yeah, okay.
And it seems to be the way of things. But let us know some of the examples you've had. If there's somebody that's been outstanding or some kind of an issue you've had, let's talk about it on the air and see if we can figure something out. Streaming media services, Disney Plus is the new kid on the block, and it seems like a lot of their content is really good. But it is the way of things. You can save yourself some money if you do this right. And if you look at the different things that are out there, and build what you want instead of the package content out of the box kind of stuff that they want to give you. Check us out on social media, One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter, 503-766-6264. This is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2019, User Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the host and not necessarily User Friendly Media Group, Inc. or this station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Podcast available at TheAnswerPortland.com or UserFriendlyShow.com.